But I realized that as the company would grow, what would happen is we would grow, and then my guys would come to me and say, hey, we need more marketing. So I'd go over and get more marketing and, you know, work it that way. And then they'd come to me and go, we're too busy. And so I'd like, oh, crap, let's bring more employees on. And so they'd come to me and go, we need more work. And so I'd go and get more marketing. And so we just kept working it that way because I wasn't in the space or working in my business. I was working on it.
This is To The Point. A Rhino Experience. Voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts. Cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
Hey, what's up To The Point, listeners? It's your boy, Chris. We're going to have a great episode today, but we're going to have a great episode without my co-host yet again, Mr. Chad Peterman, because he is picking up the kids from school. This is a late one that we're doing on the West Coast, so, you know, he's still 3 hours ahead. I'm ready for daylight savings to this whole thing to fall back. You know, so that way the East Coast is only 2 hours ahead for us West Coasters. But it's an exciting episode, so I'm bummed he's missing it. And I know he wanted to be on here, and he had sent me some questions, you know, to ask, and I literally avoided every single one that he had because I had even better ones. So I'm excited to, you know, to have our guest on today, Carrie Kelsch. And we met, I think it was this, I can't remember if it was like 2 years ago or was this last year. I cannot remember, and I won't even say where. But I do, I remember meeting some of your team for the first time at Vertical Track, I believe it was, like a couple of years ago. Is that right? They were there.
That was correct, yeah.
Here in Phoenix. So that's where I met them. And then I think I met you the same year. And I hadn't heard of you at that point in time. And then once I heard about your business, I was like, whoa, like, what is this? Like, help me understand. So Carrie, for our listeners, is CEO and founder of A Plus Garage Doors, which is business. I think you started in 2005. Is that right? 2005.
That's correct. Yeah.
Oh, good grief! Which is like a lifetime ago at this point. You're like almost 20 years into this business.
Yeah. Next year we get to celebrate it.
That's a pretty cool milestone. So congratulations. That's pretty neat. And for reference, they're up in Utah. Up in I think headquarters is in Sandy. So you're in the Salt Lake City market. Actually, you're all over. Like, you kind of spread out over Utah now.
Yes, all over. And headquarters in West Valley. Yes.
It's in West Valley. Okay. So, and this is, this is a nice little $35 million garage door business. Like, fantastic. Good for you. It's a neat story. Like I said, when I first met you and I heard, I was like, oh, wow, like, this is really intriguing. And then, I've gotten to spend, you know, a couple of times together, just kind of talking, getting to know each other. And so I thought the story was really cool. And by the way, if you're listening right now and you're not in garage doors, it doesn't matter. It's because that's just what we're going to talk about, is that was her business. But all the things that we're going to talk through are relatable to every business that's in home services or home improvement. So I just am like genuinely curious. And I think that's kind of what makes some of these podcasts fun is, you know, I usually do a lot of due diligence before these, but man, you're hard to find information on. It's like, I can dig pretty deep and I'm like, why is it so difficult to find like information on you? So now we're going to just ask them on the air. Like, we're just going to talk about it. But I do think that there's a couple of things I want to say to the listeners right off the bat. Like, you're in Utah. You're not in every market in Utah, but you've kind of spread out because you have some, like, you're kind of spread out a little bit over the state. But you're not doing anything outside of the garage door business, right? You're not like, are you flirting with anything? I'm talking about when we're talking about A+. A+ is just in the garage door business, right?
Yes, just in the garage door business.
Got it. So a lot of my listeners know, you know, my good friend Tommy. You know who Tommy is. And, you know, so we always hear about Tommy's business and all the things about Tommy's business. But like, $35 million business in the garage door business is like that's not the norm. That's the opposite of norm. So you've done something very great. And I'm excited to talk about what you've done to get to that point. So, and the garage door business is intriguing to me. And you'll see in some of the questions I'm asking, but I want to say this right up front as a guy who was raised by my mom, who's working like many, many jobs, like multiple jobs just to make it work for me and my sister. Like, I have the utmost respect for hardworking women who support their families. And you had kids young. So like, you had to figure things out fast.
Yeah.
And you didn't get to graduate high school. Yet here you are, who persevered and created something exceptional, because like, as we were talking pre-podcast, like, there's a lot more stories of people who who didn't make it through. Like, they just felt like it was over, or maybe they didn't have good guidance. And by the way, if you're young, like, you only know how to deal with the situation how you've been taught to deal with the situation, right? But you know, if you have drive, you got a little bit of hope, you know, and you have some will, you can go a long way. So, and I don't know this part of your story. Like we just talked about this ahead of the podcast, and some parts interesting, but I respect it, because you know, people are looking like, oh my gosh, you didn't graduate, you know, high school. And like, especially we're talking like, okay, you started your business in 05, but you did some things in between that, between high school and starting your business. So like, I don't know how you got into garage doors, and I'm not going to ask you to share all, I'm just going to ask you to share what you want to on, like, how did you get to a garage door business? Was that what the plan was? Was it just the opportunity? Like, how did you get to this place, like in the garage door business?
I definitely didn't go, oh my gosh, I can't wait to be in the garage door space. I was dating a guy. So I'm a single mom dating a guy that worked in the garage door space, and he kept begging me to open up a company. And I just didn't want to be tied to anybody. And so I just kept telling him no. And he's like, well, if you open a company, you'll own it, I'll manage it, and your kids could work there. So he really got me in the heart, you know, the mom heart. So I was like, oh, I do want a place my kids could work. And so I thought, oh, it'd just be a small little company. My kids can go work there when they get out of school and, you know, kind of get some good work ethic going on. And that worked. It actually started working well that way. But I found that I was spending more and more time in the space. Like, I was a mortgage broker. So after hours, I would come home and I'd work in the garage door space, either depositing checks, working on, I don't know, marketing, you know, all the back end stuff, working on taxes, whatever it may be, entering invoices. And so after a while, it was around 3 years later that I found that 2008, the garage door company was growing as my mortgage industry was crashing
fast. Right. Yep.
Yeah.
So, okay. So here's another thing. Whomever that was, clearly was a good salesperson too.
Yes, very good salesperson.
Because they got you sold quickly. Mm-hmm. And you came in. So let me just take a quick step back. So what I heard you say is you kind of looked at it as like family business. Like, the family could get into this and be and participate. And that's something that was worth taking the time building for you, because that's something that was obviously really mattered to you. So it would give them direction on maybe something that you didn't have. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So that's, by the way, like, I've learned a lot of things. I've been down like many coachings and trainings, both emotionally and physically. And I've learned that, you know, a lot of times from what you learn from your past experience, and you wanted to give the opposite of those things to your kids, you know, and be that. And I think that's great. Like, because some people could just be like, yeah, I didn't have it either, you know, like, and move on.
Yeah.
I love those conversations, by the way, like, love those conversations. But so, okay. You start in 2005, the business is the business A+ in 2005. So that's the name.
So I named it A+ because, you know, again, I have kids, and I was thinking, well, these moms that are staying at home that are wanting their doors fixed, they'll be calling somebody, and I'll have a magnet sitting right on the fridge that says A+, and they'll be hanging their kids' paperwork on there. And so they'll call me.
Got it. Okay. So
it was all around my kids.
Yes. Yeah, sure. Say, like, that's what it seems like it is. Well, and by the way, you know, it was, you know, we're still phone book days then. So
yeah, we did have an A for sure.
Pretty good spot.
In the phone. Mom got stuck in that hole. Got to have an A.
That's right. The A space, A space, yeah. Those days. Okay. So you didn't have this like burning passion being garage doors. Now here you are. Right. So now you're in the business and you're working two jobs. You've got your mortgage job. So were you doing the mortgage thing at the same time, or did you bring that on after just to supplement, you know, like, the, you know, your income because you're starting a new business?
So I was doing mortgages first, very successful at it. And then I just let that die off as I started doing the garage doors more and more.
Got it. So, because once the business started to become established, make a little bit more money, you could kind of wean yourself off of doing the mortgage stuff.
Well, yeah. And of course the 2008 crash really helped me wean myself off.
That's fair. I guess so. I don't mean to laugh at that. Listen, no. Always there's always a lesson in every trial. Okay.
That's right.
And that lesson was, Gary, you're done. Focus on A+.
Yep.
So hey, listen, that was a blessing as well too, because, you know, one today you think about what you learned as, you know, as still young as you were back then. And like you had to learn all these things, you know, and which prepares you for growth in business because it takes you through hard times. So I just want to focus on a couple things real quick. I'm really going to kind of hit on growth and some of the strategy behind, the growth that you've had and the things that you've learned. And I think that the best way that our listeners learn from this podcast is when we are like vulnerable, right? Because it's easy to go and pound your chest. And I'm around enough people who do those things. Tell me all the great things that they are and their businesses are. And I also have some good friends who've had really successful businesses that talk to me about a lot of their failures. And those are the parts where I really connect with them. Like, cause I'm like, sweet, let's talk about that stuff because we've all been through a variation of it. And like people don't want to talk about it, but that's like everybody goes through that. Yeah. So, but you've built a great garage door business. So what I want to go to is what were some of like the key, like as you, well, actually let me take a step back before I even get to that question. You're 3 years in. Now you're just focused on A+. Do you have roughly like what the size of this business was then, or even the, like the people in the business? I'm trying to get an idea of what the organization looked like and what the size of it was in 08.
So I am that guy that convinced me to open the garage door company, the really good salesman also convinced me to marry him. So I, by then have married this guy. He's now working in it full time also.
Okay.
And he needs some help. And so is always reaching out to my family. So one of my first employee was my sister-in-law, and then my second employee was my nephew at age 16, who has now worked his way up to the COO, and he does such a fabulous job. I think a lot of people know Parker.
Who's your nephew?
Parker.
Parker? Oh.
Yes.
Cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
He's been with us for such a long time, and he's really just earned everywhere that he's gone. He's really earned it all.
That's fantastic. So first off, like people are listening and they're like, hey, I've heard you don't bring family into this business. Well, guess what, listeners? She started this thing with family in mind. And the first couple people you bring on board are family members.
Right. You know what? You really want to watch that. People have asked me a lot. They're like, you know, what should I bring family on? Should I hire family? And I said, well, look at your family. Look at the culture in your family. Do you love the culture? Do you guys yell at each other? Do you love each other? What is it? If you love the culture, bring them on because you're going to love the culture. But if you don't like the culture of your family, do not bring them on.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I think that, you know, and I have family. My wife is, you know, she's now the president over all of Home Services, but we started the business together, you know, but we did have a fine line, Drew, like to know, you know, and by the way, like, listen, when you have family in, sometimes you feel like, okay, I can treat them a little bit differently. They're my family. You can't. Yeah, you cannot do it. Like, that is a slippery slope.
Yep.
You got to have like the line in the sand. But yep, you're right. Yeah, you have people that you can trust. Like I've had plenty of people that are in my family who asked me to come work for me, and I have to politely decline because I'm like, that's not who we are. Like, unfortunately, and I love you, but you're just, it does. I love this business, you know, and I have a lot of responsibility. Yeah. So, okay. So now you bring on your first couple of employees. Now what's your job then? So now you're bringing on people that you're responsible for. I'm sure you're probably still wearing multiple hats. What's your job?
So, I mean, we're all wearing multiple hats at this time. So my husband's out there running every single job and building relationships. And I'm in the back end doing all the office work. But I didn't really realize at this time that I had a company. I mean, I knew that the family was, you know, being sustained by this, but I didn't really realize I had a company to run. It wasn't until 2013 that I did some college courses that I realized that, oh my gosh, I've got to run a company. Like, somebody's got to lead this. So there's got to be, you know, some direction of where we're going. And so that was really huge. In 2013, we had around, God, we were probably 1.5 million then in revenue.
Okay.
So it took a long time to get there, to get off that.
Well, I think a lot of people can relate. And it's like, you know, you can only sell so much. At some point in time, you do have to run a business too. And you need all these things that come along with the business.
Yeah.
But like, it's not uncommon for it to slow roll for growth because you're kind of learning different things. And that first million is probably like, a lot of people hear is like the hard, like that's your first hard moment is like getting to that first $1 million. And I've seen it so many times from the one to the three, to the five, to the 10, to the 12, like, and it's all different stuff. There's all like, you're going to hit like, it's all hard, but it's just different kinds of hard.
Yes, I would agree. There's definitely the different layers that you've got to kind of work through. And as you're elevating up, then you're like, oh, that doesn't work anymore. We've been doing it for years and it just doesn't work. And pretty soon your processes and systems that you thought you had are just all over the place. And you're finding an invoice here or a check there. And you're just like, oh, now we've got to find some way to mitigate this.
Yeah, somebody to like keep an eye on these things, like, because all these things matter. Yeah. So when did you guys start to see like your first significant bump in growth? And I'm not like downplaying your 1.5 million. I'm just saying, you know, in comparison to where you're at now, when did you feel like maybe some things are really starting to click? Like, cause 2013, you're 1.5. When did you see that start to happen?
I would say right after I did that course. The good thing about not graduating is that you really know that you know nothing. And so I had no idea what I was doing. So when this class opened up to me, when I went to it, I'm like, I don't know anything. So I was a sponge and absorbed everything. And then I came back and implemented as much as I could and it worked. So just going to this and implementing everything that I've learned and just like having clear intention to grow, that's when we started just seeing like 25 to 30% growth year over year over year. And we just kept going.
Do you think one of your superpowers is that you implement quickly?
I would definitely say that, like, when you don't know what you're doing and you're just going to implement it. Now we're a little bit slower to implement things. We kind of look at it and decide. But when you don't have anything to lose, then of course you're going to implement it really quickly. So I'd say at the very beginning, for sure, that was one of my superpowers, is just implementing it. And it's easy. It's easy to kind of make changes when you're smaller. When you get really as big as we are now, making a change, everybody kind of throws their hand up and runs around panicking. So.
Well, you can remember that, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, when you were in school, were you a good student? Were you a smart student?
I was a solid C student.
Okay. Okay. Same. I feel you. But I was.
There's something about the C students. I tell people, I'm like, you know what? They have to try so hard to be the C student. And once they get out of like school, then they're just try so hard because you're just used to failing all your life. So all you got is just to give it your all. And you're just hoping that you'll scratch the surface of something.
Oh, for sure. So I'm going to date myself because I'm 45. I remember my senior year. I had to have a B minus average to get the good student discount on my car insurance. So I tried so hard to get to a B minus average, but I also took, I was in choir, I was in PE, I was a student aide. I took the study hall. Mm-hmm. I took the easiest classes my senior year and I still ended at a B minus average.
That's literally how it goes.
My social game was on point. I was really good at social. Same for college. I did a great job socializing in college. Okay, so you start to see a little bit of growth. Now, all this is happening, I'm assuming, in the Salt Lake City market only, right? Like, that's it.
Yes.
And I'm talking like greater Salt Lake, you know, metro area. Okay. So now do you have, now do you get to, you, I mean, you've got, you know, back, you know, a few back-to-back years of 25, I think you said 25 to 35% growth. You're starting to add bodies, right? And I'm sure that your husband is now also has other installers or technicians that are out there running these jobs too, right? Yeah. So this is a business. This is a real business now.
Yeah.
Do you remember when you break your 10 million mark?
Oh, you know what? I don't exactly remember what year it was.
So it had to be somewhere though in the, I guess
around 2016, I would say.
Okay, cool. So like, all right, like that's feeling good. That's a solid garage door business. It's still in Salt Lake City time, right?
Still just in Salt Lake City. Yeah.
When did you actually start to expand outside of Salt Lake City?
This year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't realize it was that fast.
Yeah. 19 years later.
Yeah, like, holy shit.
I know. Okay.
So then let me just ask a couple of things. So when you guys are, now I'm like, this is a business, like a real, like a good sized business where you really have to plan and prioritize and come up with projections mm-hmm. and like all those things. And you got to bring people with you.
Right.
Who are a part of the plan. And I've met some of your staff too, and they're very loyal. And it seems like you very much include them in maybe not the ultimate decision-making process, but in the process, and so when you're growing this thing, how did you identify and prioritize like growth opportunities in a market, especially a market as big as Salt Lake City, in a market as competitive as garage doors? Because I mean, there's a lot of garage door repair folks that can be sole proprietors out there working, just like technicians, air conditioning technicians or electricians. But like, you have to some point in time, like start to prioritize this growth plan. So like, what were some of those things that you identified as like, okay, these are the things we really need to start focusing on to grow this business?
Right. You know what? I would love to make it sound like I had all the great ideas. As you know, I did not have all the great ideas. I would have an idea. And one of my first one was like, let's go into commercial. Like, we're doing amazing in residential. Let's take it into commercial. And so we started to do that. And we realized that we are so busy with residential that we're spinning our wheels with commercial, trying to figure it out when we're over here just getting slammed with residential. So then we just kind of backed off on commercial. And so the growth really happened just naturally. It just like, and I think one of the big things with me is I thought it again was another weakness, just like, me not graduating, I thought was a weakness. But what I was really frustrated that I've never been in the garage doors. I've never gone and installed I wound a spring, but literally that's about it. So I've never really done the work. And so I was really frustrated with that. But I realized that as the company would grow, what would happen is we would grow and then my guys would come to me and say, hey, we need more marketing. So I'd go over and get more marketing and, work it that way. And then they'd come to me and go, we're too busy. And so I'd like, oh, crap, let's bring more employees on. And so they'd come to me and go, we need more work. And so I'd go and get more marketing. And so we just kept working it that way because I wasn't in the space or working in my business. I was working on it. And so I really could keep it growing because that's all I knew. That was my only gift,
So you're using the reactionary marketing tactic.
Yes. It is very much so. Yes.
By the way, very common, that happens until you're like, okay, when do I actually put something in place for this? Put some balances in place.
Yeah.
So part of like, I know I work with NER up there and they have mm-hmm. a very huge brand and I know a lot of their story and wide story and how they built the business and like, they're super involved in the community and like, as they were growing it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times for anybody that's listening to it, starting businesses or have smaller businesses, or even if you have big businesses, community involvement is super important.
Very important. So
I'm assuming that was a part of your plan or your, absolutely. We'll use airport plans. Yeah. Was community involvement, to help build your brand. Cause then you can get the referrals, but that means you need to give exceptional customer service and
yes.
Right. How did that contribute to your growth? And I want the listeners to pay attention to this because this is something that people think like what does it mean to be involved in my community? I go to the church and my kid, like that's, you need to do a little bit more. You're like, if you're in a community, like that should be your first place that you should be like involved in that community, like especially in our types of businesses, these home services businesses or home improvement businesses.
Yeah. So well, how do you want to be in? For sure. You want to be in everyone's like top of mind. You want to be their go-to. I know that like you want to be in their phones, right? You want them to just not even look for you. Just, oh, there's my garage door person. And then somebody that your parents, you can send to their parents or you can refer to your grandmother. And that was really always our focus is I would tell my staff, I'm like, look, we want to be the company that you would refer to your parents or that you'd refer to your grandparents because everyone's so protective of their grandparents. And so really that was our focus going forward is just taking care of those customers, but showing up in a way that they really knew that they could trust us and they could send us to their loved ones. But being part of the community, again, my husband was amazing at this. He would just, he had a lot of free time where he wasn't working, running service. And so what he would do is he would just put out like on Facebook, and he would just be like, hey, free service calls for anybody, or a free Lubin tune for anyone. And the first so many people, I'll give you this. And he was like booked, I don't know, 10, 12 a day. And he wouldn't sell them anything. He would go there and he would be like, he'd diagnose it and you need this. And they're like, well, take care of it. And he's like, nope, I'm just here to give you the free Lubin tune. And he just built that rapport. And so that really helped build the community around us. So he was really definitely amazing at that, going and doing that. But then also when you teach the guys and all of the technicians out there that their main purpose is to make sure and, you know, leave a good feeling with that customer and make sure that that customer would refer them to somebody else, then their focus is really taking care of the customer. And in taking care of them always doesn't mean let's put a Band-Aid fix on it. That is not taking care of the customer. Right. Like, fix it right so the customer trusts that it's going to work in the middle of the night and they're not going to be like trying to get out of the house to, because their wife's in labor and they can't because the door's broke. Like, you're literally saving lives.
Yeah, well, listen, yeah, I think that's actually fantastic. And you said a couple things, like some people are listening to this thinking like, why would he go and just do it for nothing when they would have paid him? Well, listen, you are actually selling without selling in that moment. You're one, selling yourself and the integrity and value of your business. Some people would argue and say, well, you know, what's the value? Like, you know, are you going in? Mm-hmm. You know, what's the value on the service that you're offering? You just played the long game. But maybe their door, to your point, Gary, doesn't have an issue, but now they're referring you because of the way you treated them. And this is a relationship business still.
Yeah, it is. Well, and you remember, like, his point of doing this was also his give back. Like, I want to give back to my community. And so it wasn't a take, and he wasn't thinking, oh, you're going to hire me in the future. He really just wanted to give back to the community, and he had the free time to do it because we hired enough employees that he didn't have to be working every single day. I think, and that's really important, that you bring on your supporting team underneath you and to fill those places and those things that you do every day.
Yeah, I mean, delegation is a big part of growth. Like, you have to delegate to elevate. I've heard that term used before, and it's so true. People you trust, people you coach, but as long as they kind of follow your core values, your business, like, you know, you can trust them, you'll do their thing, and you support them. You have to be able to do that to grow and scale. Now, here's something that's always interesting to me about the garage door business. And this probably applies to, you know, some other phases and all the listeners that are right now to some of your businesses, but we're going to use garage doors for this one. I can't remember if it was one of the vertical tracks I was speaking at, or a home service freedom or whatever, because I've been at a couple of them. But I remember showing this TikTok clip of, you know, people running out, you know, like they try to run out of the garage door, you know, and then jump over the sensor to not close the door. And then they smack their head on the garage door and they fall down. It's always funny, 'cause then they dent the garage door when there's a garage door repair job. By the way, that's a funny one to use for a garage door repair. But, you know, think about this. I'm going to tell you a true story to apply to this story. And I promise you, I'm telling you the truth based on what I know. So I'm backing out of the garage door. The garage door is open. I'm backing out to go to work. I've got a gate on my house, right, and a garage door, and they're both run off of, I think it's my queue. I think that's what my app is. So garage door's open, and I hit the gate button to open the gate. As I'm backing out of the garage door, I got to come out of the garage door and then go through the gate. I'm backing out. So I back out. Garage door closes on me. I swear I hit the gate button. Okay. The gate button is what I pressed, but for whatever reason, garage door closes on me. And now the garage door is crumpled out and it won't close. I can't get out. I've got a board meeting I have to be at in 30 minutes. I'm already running late. This is when panic sets in. Okay. 'Cause now you're like, oh my gosh, my house is exposed. It's open. The garage door, I can't get out. Like, there's so many problems in that moment. So this is where I'm headed with that. This is a very common service call for you, service call. And this is the one where I love to challenge, like, you know, if I'm talking to Tommy about this, is how much do you think brand equity, brand matters in that moment? What's the most important thing in that moment for that type of an emergency call?
Yeah.
I'm going to give you my two answers. and you tell me if I'm on, I'm off, or if I'm kind of right. Fair?
Fair.
Okay. So I think, could it give you, if you have good brand equity, you got your sticker on the door, inside the door, whatever it is, and they call you first. Yes, I think there's value in having that brand equity. But what I think matters more is the speed to the lead, the speed to the home. Like, and like I needed somebody there now as fast as I could get there. And that wasn't the sticker on my door.
Yeah.
And so to me, brand equity was out the window. It was like, who can get to me the fastest and get this thing done? Don't even care what it costs. Like, just come on, come and get this thing squared away. Yeah. Which one of those to you is like what you think is the most important in that moment?
Speed. Definitely the speed.
Yeah. I don't like it. I've thought about, I'm like, this can't just be me. Like, it's a behavior. It's a human behavior. So to me at that moment, brand was out the window. Like, if it happened to be the one I thought of or the one that did my work, great. But if they can't get to me, I'm moving straight on to the next person to get it done.
Yeah.
I don't know how you overcome that.
You know, it's definitely hard to overcome. I don't know if you ever do really overcome it completely, just because, like, I would always tell people, I'm like, nobody cares the name of your company. And that is true to a point. But what happens is when they are searching for you and they do their little Google search and then they see you pop up there and they're like, oh, I'm comfortable with that one. And their eyes are drawn to it because it's familiar and comfortable to them. They don't know your name. I mean, my own family still calls my company. Don't tell Tommy I said this. They still call me A1. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You know, you guys have known me forever, which at first it didn't really bug me. But now that, you know, I'm right there, like, I'm like, look at your, call me A1, you know, but really they don't care the name of your company. They just care that they feel comfortable knowing that they're going to be taken care of quickly, efficiently, whatever that is.
Got it. So, okay. So I'm going to, I want to thank you for reassuring me that I am correct. I feel like speed to lead is the most important thing. I want to move on. Like, let's get into the COVID years. Okay. So in the home services space, home improvement space, once everybody was done freaking out, our business has really shot up. Like, we had a nice up and to the right. And especially as people were home, like, and they couldn't travel, they're spending money on home improvements and things like this or whatever. I'm assuming you experienced some of the same things in your business. Is that right?
That is correct. Absolutely. Yeah.
Great. So, and then the, you know, 23 hits, and even now we're, you know, gosh, it's going to be September here shortly. Actually, by the time this airs, it is September. So it's like, we're, you know, three quarters away through 24 already, but business is not so much order taking, because there's a lot of order taking happening in that moment. Now we got to get back to running our business, but a lot of seen some businesses scale because of those easy sales. And now we're like, oh, like, I got to start paying attention again to the blocking and tackling and things like that. So one of the questions I want, is that kind of what your guys' experience has been at A Plus?
Yeah, we definitely had the same experience.
Okay. And has this year been kind of more up, flat, like the same, like how has this year gone?
It's definitely flat.
Okay. So, which is what I've heard quite a bit. So it kind of helps you to reset a little bit.
Yeah, you get creative for sure.
Yeah. Now you have to go back and like start looking at all the things again. And it's just, this is part of business. And then you will be like, but now this is the moment, like, it caused you to go back and like double check those things. So what I wonder is, you know, when you're growing and then you start to go flat, like, you got to balance your workforce and finances. And you still got to make sure, like, am I still spending money on marketing? Am I not spending money on marketing? Marketing is even more expensive, you know, and still have to give high quality service.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and now there's like, you know, do you have recruiting issues? And you're like, well, no, because now I'm just trying to like keep people busy. Like, the people that I already have, which is a whole other, you know, a whole other thing. But like, you know, so like, what are you doing to balance that? Because, you know, when it gets challenging right now, are you guys of the mindset of like, hey, we got to go and find the work at whatever the cost is going to be to keep our staff busy? Do we need to right size? A lot of right sizing happening in 2024, by the way. But like, What's your take on this whole current state of the market with the, like, from you having experienced that growth to, you know, kind of being more, you know, flat now? By the way, just so listeners are paying attention, when you have a lot of growth and you're flat, that's still not a bad thing. Like, that's not a bad thing. It just means like you grew a ton and now you're just starting to level out. Like, yeah. Not a bad thing.
Well, and I think a lot of it depends on why are you flat? Like for us, our LSA went down and we were struggling to get it to come back up. And so that was 35% of our business. And so when that goes down and we're still flat, we know we're winning. And so it just depends on why you're flat. Now that our LSA is up, back up, then we're just back up and we're selling through these last couple of months. So I know that we won't be flat at the end of the year. But you definitely, when that does happen, you take a step back and you look at it and go like, what way do you want to go? Do you want to start, you know, cutting your dollars and tightening up everything? Or do you want to like just throw money at the, you know, and see what sticks? Well, you're just going to have to throw money at it and see what sticks. Or if not, you know, you're stuck and you don't have any business. So.
Yeah. So did you have to do like any pricing increase or anything like that?
We didn't have to really do any major pricing increases. I mean, it's not really a good idea when you're struggling anyway to throw new pricing increases at your guys and at, you know, the market. I would say we definitely restructured and we pulled together and decided like what we need to do to become, to start going up. And we tried a couple of things that didn't work and you back it off and then you keep going in the direction. Most of it, like if you're going to do a price increase, then we would look at going like, what is the competition doing and moving things up that way. I think it's not always just do a massive pie price increase when your numbers start or when you're flat. I just don't feel like that's the solution, but we did small price increases with everyone else over 2023 and 2022. We were doing price increases. So on 2024, we just felt like we didn't need to do any huge price increases. We just need to get really good at what we are doing. And we kind of stepped back and went, okay, we do garage doors. What made us great in the very beginning? And it's really customer service and doing great work and really connecting with the customer. So we really stepped back and said, how can we do this better? And I think that really helped us get to the next level and just to keep that flat, which is really, in my eyes, even though it's flat, it was still a 23% growth because we've just lost LSA. So, but now you just keep going with the what's working and dropping off what's not working. I don't know. We definitely tightened up our belt more on like some of the marketing things that weren't working. And then we've been trying new things. So.
But you guys got hit with all the inflation stuff too, right? Like, and supply and demand, like all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's not unreasonable, I think, to, you know, I mean, and maybe because what you're saying is you maybe covered, you covered that in 22, 23, and you felt like, I feel like we're going to be like, we've done enough and you don't want to raise it again. Mm-hmm. Like, is that okay? But you, like, are you still experiencing any of that stuff now? Or is that kind of like fizzled out a little bit?
No, it's kind of fizzled out.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that like we definitely raised our prices quite a bit just to keep up with inflation.
Right.
I don't know. I feel like when you're struggling, a lot of people will pull away and go, you know, I'm going down. I'm losing revenue, so I'm going to pull away and not put so much in advertising and tighten it up that way, or they're going to raise their prices. And I think some of those big moves might get scary to people. Like, especially to your employees that are out there working. And so I think you just keeping a level head and making very, I don't know, executed judgment on what needs to be done.
Do you guys have a, I'm assuming the answer is going to be yes, but do you guys have a really good culture? Like everybody's bought into the culture?
Yes. I mean, okay. I would definitely say yes.
Okay. Kind of got that vibe a little bit too. And, you know, and I mean, I love asking that question, but like it's, and a lot of owners are like, yeah, of course you have a good culture.
Yeah. Everyone's going to say that they've got a great culture.
But like, you know, like, cause you can start to hear rumblings from people like, you know, if like, like maybe we don't, but you know, and listen, like you cannot make everybody in the business happy. Like that would just, it just can't happen. Somebody's not going to like a decision that you yeah, make.
For sure.
But overall, you like, you know, if like everybody's kind of rowing the boat in the same direction. In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with Chirp deep integrations with top CRMs like ServiceTitan, Housecall Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser-targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads, capture them. Connect faster and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game.
If you've been listening to this show, you'll know that I only talk about tools that actually help our team. And BlueOn is definitely one of those. At Peterman Brothers, our techs are using BlueOn every single day. It's become their go-to resource. It really is like having a senior tech in your pocket. They can scan a unit, get all the model data, wiring diagrams, parts, and even troubleshoot with BlueOn's AI. We've seen fewer callbacks, faster fixes, and happier techs. And that's why I'm such a big believer in BlueOn, because it actually works. So do yourself a favor, click on the link in the description and book a quick demo with the BlueOn team to see it in action.
Yeah, I feel like they definitely are.
So let me talk about this. Because I don't want to just skip over, you know, some like the challenging things, because again, we all go through it. And like I told you, like, I love being able to share that. And so like, it's not like this has been all, you know, sunshine, you know, rainbows and flowers and all this stuff. Like you run into some challenges, like whether it be operational challenges or people challenges or financial challenges or like, and financial challenges, by the way, doesn't mean your business is failing. Okay. So people want to hear like what sort of challenges did you come across in this business where you're like, oh, like this was a real problem that we had to really think about to overcome to move the business, you know, forward to us for us to keep growing. Is there anything like that off the top of your head? Where you're like, oh yeah, like I can tell you, I know like this one and this one, or these are the things, or like, this is the one thing that stands out to me that we ran into. We really had to think through to help grow our business. Does something like that pop up at the top of your head when I ask that question?
Yeah, there's always the challenge of letting go of those people that are not the culture fit. And yeah, and they're like, oh, it's my top salesperson or it's my family member that I love so much. And you just, and making those hard decisions. I mean, that one definitely comes to mind.
Okay, listeners, two critical things that you just said. Let go of your top salesperson and a family member. These are two separate scenarios, okay?
Yeah.
And with two separate pressures, right? Yeah. But what you just said about letting go of your top salesperson because of a culture fit, that's a boss move right there. Because you are thinking about the business and everybody else in the business and a toxic person regardless.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about this person, but whatever happened. But you don't remove your top salesperson for no reason.
No, you don't.
So, you know, like maybe, you know, like how – That sets a precedence, I think, for the rest of your staff to show like, hey, no matter how good of an employee you are, if you don't follow these standards for us or X, Y, Z, like you don't have a place here. And not that you got to be rude or like to the person leaving, it's just not a fit anymore. Like,
yeah,
does that go down? Like, how did that go down? Like, it's hard to get your best salesperson.
Well, you know, you would always think that this isn't going to go well. Maybe the whole company is going to be upset at me because we're doing this, but actually it's the exact opposite. All the other employees come up and then they thank you for having their back. They're like, thank you so much for protecting us from this, you know, bad apple or rotten apple.
Yep.
And I'm blown away because I was like, wow, like I didn't realize that doing that meant so much to them. And so it really, you get kind of an opposite effect when you make these moves.
Yeah. So it has a bigger impact on the company overall. And what most people are thinking about when they hear this is like, oh my God, like I couldn't afford to get rid of my number one, my best salesperson. It's because we're looking at it from the wrong perspective. And you never know, like behind the scenes, what's happening. And if you start noticing people, you know, leaving or complaining, and now you're creating this toxic environment, that's what you can't have in your business.
That is true.
So that's why I say that's a boss decision, because like that, you know, that is a class act move.
Yeah.
And so what I'm curious to know is in your, you know, if you have a best salesperson, you have a second best salesperson. So that's wondering how the second best salesperson steps up to that challenge. If you have like a conversation with them at all, or like how that goes.
You know, normally you don't even have to have the conversation with them. They just naturally step up just because they're, like you said, one of two things. You said they're so grateful that you just got rid of whatever was toxic, or they're like, oh, I better straighten up because I could be, you know, on the chopping block. So it just goes either way. And there's really an easy way for us with my executive team that we would come to these decisions. And it's the simplest question that you ask. And so you would go and you'd say, this is what I would always do. I'd go to my executive team and I would say, all right, if this person quit, would we hire them back? And they would sit there and be like, well, no, if they quit, we're not going to hire them back. I'm like, then fire them. Yeah. Like right there, that just draws the line. If they quit, would you hire them back?
I mean, that's a pretty easy question to ask, but sometimes a difficult decision to make.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think everybody goes through that at some point in their business. Like I kind of came up in the sales world, and I think that I for sure went through that phase early in my sales career, in my like early 20s, where I was really good at talking to people. Like I said, I got A pluses in social, like, you know, in my social life in school, like I was great at that. And I've always cared about like people. So I'm an empathetic guy, and I've always had that. And maybe it's because I was raised by my mom. I don't know. I got sisters. I got raised by my mom. I've got all girls now, by the way, one boy. So I'm like three girls, one boy. And my son is just like me when I was his age. So at least I know what I'm dealing with, but we're very confident, you know, very confident, very social. But I got really good at sales because I was really good at talking to people, because what I thought I was selling to them was what I thought that actually would help them with whatever it was. And I really cared. Like, so it made me naturally a good salesperson, but where I think it happens is I started to get an ego.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm young. I come from nothing. And now I'm starting to make some money, and I'm thinking, like now let me show you, like I didn't have much. I do now. And I got arrogant, and I started to be somebody I'm not. And then I become toxic, you know? Yeah. So I had to like self-evaluate and be like, man, I am not, like, this is not who I want to be, you know? And that happens, right? So it's like sometimes, you know, when you get some young, hungry salespeople too, and I'm not sure anything about this person, but like we go through phases of it. Like if like, hey, okay, I need to be like brought back down to, you know, like reality. I'll get my head out of the clouds and get back in the game and be a good human being and have some integrity. But that's somebody you might say, listen, yeah, like, okay, you're coachable. Like you made a mistake. We'll bring you back down. And yes, I would rehire you because you're coachable. Yeah. Some people though, you just know, or like they're gone, like they're not coaching, right? So,
for sure.
So is that kind of, but that's kind of what you're saying, like, is like, yeah, like you know who is and who isn't rehirable, and you know who's worth, you know, spending the time on to coach, and who's not based on their past, you know, your past experience with them.
Right, you definitely can tell if someone's willing to be coached, and kind of when you bring them in and talk to them, and it's not one of these decisions that you make like overnight, like, oh, one action and I'm going to let them go, unless that action is like, you know, really a really horrible decision. But
right.
for the most part, I mean, it's going to be one of these things that you work with and you work with and you work with. I mean, it's your top. If it's your top guy, you're going to work with them quite a bit before you're just fed up and you're just like, yeah, they are not able to learn this or they're not coachable.
Do you guys do team builder events and things like that?
Yeah.
Okay. You guys do community service?
We've done quite a few community service things, like, you know, gathering together to go and install a garage door. We just did like a golfing event. Like, we sponsored it for some Ethiopians. And so it's just like a little things that we can do that the team can really, you know, rally behind. And yeah. And a lot of times my employees will bring me stuff. And I love that when they'll bring it to you and they're like, hey, this is a great cause. Can we jump behind this?
Yeah, man. There's some, like, to me, I think I told you this before. I know most of our listeners know who know me, but you know, at Rhino, our giving back is one of our foundational, like, core values. Mm-hmm. And genuinely care. Like, these are two things that mean a lot to me and Anna, my wife. So we still do community service one day every single month. We've done it, like, so we're 16 years in. Mm-hmm. One day every single month, you know, we pick a Friday and everybody goes and does community service somewhere. And we pay them. We pay them to go do community service. But when you get to, you know, and some, we have a lot of remote employees too. We also have a lot, you know, that are together. And people, so I think there's a lot to be said about building culture and going and doing community service together that doesn't benefit you directly or the business directly. Because yeah. You're building a different bond with yeah. somebody, giving back to something greater. And you might look at it as like, well, Chris, that's a ton of money to be spending for, you know, these are half days. It's 4 hours, right? Like, they work 4 hours on Fridays. So I'm all about it, like, keeping that culture going, because I see the reward of spending that money and watching them build those relationships and become closer. Because as a business grows and scales, you need everybody to kind of to be helpful and follow on, you know, the core values and, you know, and being cheerleaders, because your leaders can only do so much for you.
Right.
I'm a big believer in giving back together to create, you know, to help culture.
Yeah, I love it. I think it definitely bonds them. One of my favorite moments was when, and it was definitely certain employees trigger more than others, but when an employee will jump on and they'll just start, like, on our group chat with our whole company and say, hey, I'm going to take care of this customer. In this situation, I think they were handicapped and they were going, like, his wife had cancer and they just lost, you know, somebody in their life. And so he's like, you know what, I'm going to just get them a new door. Does anybody want to pitch in? And it probably was within 15 minutes, everything was paid for. And then people were like, hey, I want to donate my time. And it warmed your heart when they do that. And it's unsolicited. It's not me driving it. It's all the employees driving it. It's amazing.
Listeners, giving back is cool. I'm going to trademark that. Giving back is cool. And it makes you feel good.
It does.
Like, it makes you feel good. I love doing those things. And I love my kids get to do it with us, which is super cool. You know, because, you know, you can, you know, my kids are not growing up the same way I grew up. They understand that they live a privileged life, but they're very humble kids. We've been very intentional about making sure that they understand, like, that we have a privilege and that a privilege can be taken away. And that mom and dad are under privilege, not them. But okay.
Yes.
You know, but hey, they also got to watch us build this thing, right? Like, you yeah. know, same thing with you. Like, and so there's a lot of, like, you know, that's how we showed up for them in leadership. And they see those things and we see a lot of that stuff kind of developing in them. I got four. I said, I got my daughter. I got to see her yesterday, which is awesome. Cause she's in the military. She's going in for intelligence. She wants to be in the CIA. So she's in a full Russian immersion program right now with the Air Force. So it's good to see her yesterday. She's 24. I got a 17-year-old girl who's a senior in high school, 13-year-old boy who's in eighth grade, and then I got a 9-year-old girl who's in fourth grade. She hasn't quite figured out all the things yet, but the rest of them are, like, on the right track. But she's the one that challenges us a little bit.
Yeah. You know, I love that you can incorporate them in what you guys do, and that they were able to watch you grow the business. One of my favorite pictures is, I've got a picture of, like, I'm up there unloading the springs, and I've got three of my kids, because I've also had four. Three of my kids were helping me unload this and stack them in the, you know, in our warehouse. And it's amazing. It's exactly what I wanted when I envisioned it.
Yeah, right from the start when you said, like, mm-hmm. hey, this is what got sold you into getting into the business in the first place. Yeah. That's pretty cool. That's like, hey, there comes full circle.
Yeah.
Okay, so then I'm going to close this thing out because I think that's like the perfect segue is, you know, we're almost an hour into this thing already, Carrie. I didn't realize you had four kids. I would have asked more questions on how you grow and scale the business and still manage the family, because that's a whole other piece of this. Because it's hard to not miss stuff when you're growing and building a business, but you try really hard to not miss things. And again, that's like a whole episode on its own.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about how we just kind of saw that thing come full circle with that picture you're talking about. And again, you guys are a $35 million business. You probably have plans to keep growing this thing. So as you look ahead, what are the next big goals for the company? And if you've identified what those are, and maybe it's not just revenue, maybe it's something else. I don't know. It could be adding another cert. Maybe it's adding a location, but what are the next big goals? But what are the challenges that you think that you can kind of see, like, hey, these might be the challenges that we're going to run into? Because by now you've got some of that gut instinct that comes from being in business and being around it to see some of those things.
Yeah.
What are some of those things for you? What are some of the big goals that you have, and what are some of the challenges you see coming ahead?
Well, the big goal is obviously to grow it. But what we're seeing going ahead, and we're super excited about this, is we're excited to join the Guild Group and just become part of that. And the challenges there, I mean, it's so exciting. Our whole team is very excited about it. But the challenge is going to be getting other companies and finding the best in class and just finding out, like, what's going to make the very best garage door company service industry work, and then taking that and implementing it over in this company and implementing it over in this company and just watching them all grow. To me, that is going to be so exciting.
I had no idea that you were a part of that.
Well, we will be soon.
Oh my God. This is the official announcement?
There will be an official announcement.
Well, do you not understand how many people are going to hear this?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I had no idea. Congratulations. I had no idea.
Thank you.
So yeah. Jeff Sanford's in there. I mean, I had Jeff, a customer of mine for a long time, and yeah. A buddy of mine too. Yeah.
Yeah. Jeff was out here. He's great.
Very cool. Great. Him, Tiffany, his family, they're out there in Indiana. That's where I'm from. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Great, great family. Well, yeah. Congratulations.
Came out to business. Thank you.
You're going to lead the charge in that bad boy.
Oh, you know, I've got a lot of very brilliant people right there leading the charge, like Jeff.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. But you know, I understand what you guys are doing. And I've seen some of that happening in the roofing business, because I'm in that business too. And we're doing a similar thing there. But that becomes fun, man, because now you're kind of going to now you got your team and you're kind of going, you know, now you got some all-star players, right? And you get to kind of go and do things together, and like everybody can fill each other's gaps with different, you know, and gaps in the business or the knowledge or whatever. And it makes it even more fun when you can do it with people you enjoy doing it with.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I definitely enjoy hanging out with all those guys. It's crazy because, you know, you get around, and that's where I'm comfortable at. I'm comfortable just talking about business and talking about, like, what you can do to strategize to get it to grow, or where can you market, or did this thing work? Or it's just, to me, that's fun, nerdy stuff I'm into.
It seems like so I'm going to try and sum this whole thing up for our listeners. You know, regardless of what business you're in, we're talking about Carrie's business right now. And a lot of what you have done was, one, like you wanted to create something meaningful. You wanted to make sure you had great customer service. You were willing to go and learn the things that you didn't know. You were willing to come back and try the things, mm-hmm. right? And then you were, you know, when you came across, you know, growing the team and scaling the team, you made sure that you had the right people in there. You had a good culture. And if somebody was toxic, you made sure that you took care of that like a good leader should, so people can watch how you meet people, and they can say, because you basically are teaching them something, but just by making that decision, then that something is like, I can continue to respect and trust our leadership that they are honoring our culture of our business.
Yeah.
As it grows and scales, and you built a great business, and now you've joined a group, and that group is going to have a successful end to that group at some point, or I should say a next phase to that group. So congratulations. Cause that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And it's a little different than like my deal, because I brought on a private equity partner last year in April and to run our growth plan, and they've done exactly what they said they would do. And now I'm a year and a half into it now. And it's been fun because now I got people smarter than me helping me understand how to run this thing and build the things faster, better, smarter. And like,
yeah,
a lot of value in that.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're so excited to do. I mean, we know that we don't know everything. We've got a lot of things figured out, but there's always a better way. There's always someone that's figured that you could do this or tweak this. I mean, just having a couple of these guys come and visit me, and they're just giving me their ideas, and we're already like starting to implement them, and we're just seeing amazing results. We're pretty stoked about it.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, I'm excited. So to kind of watch, you know, the story go on, you know, and look at the future. And wow, like didn't know that. Pretty cool. Yeah. Well, congratulations.
You're first, right?
Yeah. Love it. So, thanks for giving me an hour, you know, of your time, mm-hmm. and for our listeners giving us an hour of your time and kind of just talking through the business, you know, and to the listeners, I just want you to kind of hear, this is a really cool story of just like, did it, like, not like you got some like leg up to get this thing rolling, you know, had a baby at 16, you know, didn't make it through high school. Like listener, you got no excuse. Yeah. It's just a little bit of will, effort, you know, and, you know, to want, and finding a purpose, man. And your purpose was your family. Like, and that purpose could really drive you.
Really, yeah, definitely drives you. I think finding the why is so important.
Yeah. And by the way, sometimes that's very difficult to people understand it, because they kind of look at it as cliche, but that's so true. Your why, your purpose, whatever it is, figured out. And it's got to be something that's real enough to actually force you to make the hard decisions and do the hard work. So, well, Carrie, I appreciate you coming on here. Did you have fun?
I did. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm excited to be able to share your story. So thank you for sharing it. And to our listeners, you know, again, like, this is a perfect example of like, you can do just about anything that you want, as long as you got the will, you know, and if like, we kind of tag this thing with the purpose or your why at the end. By the way, if you struggle with that, let me just share with you, and you're in business, there's this one simple 15-minute video that changed everything for me, that made me think about my why first in business and really propelled us. And that was Simon Sinek's Start With Why. He has a book that's called that, but if you have ADHD like me and it's hard to read a book or listen to the audiobook, I could watch the 15-minute video and I was like, oh my gosh, this makes so much sense. How do you lead with why? People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. Is that right, Carrie?
That's absolutely true.
That's right. So listeners, I don't know what you're going to do. You got to do something, but you can't do everything. I don't know what it is. You know, sometimes you just got to figure out what is it that I need to do. But no matter what it is, do something. No 0 days.